time of year again, hurricane season. News Radio 92.3 provides informative, local, and dependable coverage to make sure you're informed of any major storms coming to our area. Before a storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 809 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. Joining us now by phone, we have Julio Diaz, the host of Let's Go Pensacola. You can listen 4 o'clock here on Saturdays and also watch movies with him, founder of the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
We are here for one night only. And how was it?
You may have seen the trailers for this film, but it's a romantic comedy set in a world where for 3 years, the United States has had a ban on premarital sex.
It's like Purge style, right?
Right.
They let sex be legal, finally.
There's one day a year for 12 hours in which premarital sex is legal. The rest of the time, everybody in the world, period, has a microchip with a little brand on their wrist. And if it's green, it means they're married and they're able to have sex whenever they want. And if it's red, they can only have sex when it turns green for about 12 hours.
Okay. Interesting premise.
It's a completely ridiculous premise. You just kind of have to get past the notion that this could ever really work.
Right. Right.
I mean, there's a whole thing where, like, if your dopamine levels rise above a certain amount, the cops show up. You know, they're notified by 5G. It's a whole thing.
Is it funny? It sounds funny.
It is funny. Yeah. It is a fun movie. It mostly succeeds on the charms of the two leads, particularly Monica Barbaro, who, as far as I'm concerned, can read the phone book and I will be captivated. Mm. Of course, the Academy Award nominated actress from the Bob Dylan biopic a year or two ago, also was in Top Gun Maverick. She's not really that young. She's in her early 30s. Both of the leads are in the early 30s.
Younger than you and me.
Valid. they get into all these wacky misadventures across New York City as this night is going on, and they're each trying to find somebody to
make the most of their 12 hours with.
Right. But the universe keeps throwing them together. It's a very dumb concept, but it's a fun rom-com. There's some really funny stuff in it. Really great supporting cast, including Molly Ringwald and LeVar Burton and Michelle Hurd. This is from the same director that did Anyone But You a couple years ago with Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell.
Oh, okay.
So it's got that same kind of touch to it. If you like that movie, I think you'll like this one, too.
Super Troopers 3, same as the second and the first?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the Broken Lizard troop. If you like what they do, here's more of it. If you don't like what they do, this is not going to be for you. The critics don't like it. Hardly surprising, but, It's more of the fun, and you know, of course, always a special shout out with any Broken Lizard movie, because of course, our friend Eric Stolhansky is part of the Broken Lizard troupe, lives here in Pensacola.
Very good, Cookie Queens.
Yeah, this is a documentary that follows four different young women from across the country who are Girl Scouts and selling Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, fun.
The travels that they go on, that kind of thing. This is by far the best reviewed movie of the week, by the way. Even One Night Only, the reviews are pretty mixed. I liked it, but you know what kind of movie this is. Super Troopers, critics hate it. You know what kind of movie this is. This one actually has really solid reviews.
Ice Cream Man?
This is a horror movie from Eli Roth. There is a big controversy about this movie right now because he made a big deal about how he hand-drew all these frames that he wanted in this particular animation sequence that's in this movie. And it turns out that he was flat out lying and he used generative AI for it. So that has really kind of, I have been like a moderate fan of Eli Roth over the years. I think he's made some interesting horror movies. He's tried to break out into some other stuff that hasn't gone so well overall. But his horror movies are usually fairly clever. It's pretty gross. I don't know that I want to see anything else he does again, because as far as I'm concerned, this is a guy that's established enough that he could have afforded to pay an animator.
And also, it's weirdly a fit for the guy who, if I remember correctly, makes a lot of bloody movies and hates the sight of actual blood himself. Like, he's a man of weird contradictions. So, you know, but okay, yeah, it's weird. He could certainly afford to pay real animators.
Still gets a little bit of a pass for his role in Inglourious Bastards, but, you know, that doesn't mean I'm going to go out and spend money on this. But the concept here is there's an ice cream man. He's serving ice cream to these kids. It's making them get psychotic.
Oh, well, you know, that old trope. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
What are you going to watch next week? Do you know yet?
I'm trying to remember the name of the film, but the one that's coming out that looks interesting is the one with Anne Hathaway, where dinosaurs have come to the small community that's been somehow isolated from the rest of the world.
The end of Oak Street.
That's the one, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, look for that.
So look forward to that, yeah.
Julio Diaz, host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays and Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. Julio, thanks for the time, as always. Look forward to talking to you soon next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
8:15 News Radio 92.3 PJ has traffic on the fives.
Traffic's brought to you by AutoZone. Get in the zone. Free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. Get in the zone, AutoZone. I-10 and 110 both continue to look good. There's also a vehicle crash with roadblock Johnson Avenue at Lawton Street in Pensacola. Use caution. If you see anything, 437-1620. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Why does brother Andrew cancel Caitlin Clark? Find out next in the Transgressors Memorial Service.
My name is Trey McMullen, and I'm running to be your state representative, not Tallahassee's. District 2 isn't just another district. It's an engine. Families, veterans, first responders, teachers, and small businesses are the fuel that keeps it running. But every engine needs a spark plug. That's the role I intend to play. Not powered by PAC money, not directed by special interests. Powered by the people of District 2. My mission isn't just to pass laws. It's to connect veterans with resources, connect employers with workers, connect families with opportunity, and to ensure your voice, not a lobbyist, is heard in Tallahassee. On day one, I'll hit the ground running to deliver real, measurable results. Because District 2 deserves a representative that works for the people, not the PACs. Vote McMullen this Republican primary.
Paid for and approved by Trey McMullen Campaign for Florida House, District 2, Republican.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Santa Rosa, I'm Jill Broxton-Teston, and I'm running for school board. As a parent of four children in our public schools, I have a personal stake in ensuring every student receives a quality education. Our district faces real financial challenges, and we need creative, responsible solutions that put students first while supporting the educators who help them succeed every day. Together, we can build strong schools, support our teachers, and prepare our kids for the future. I'm Jill Broxton-Teston, and I'd be honored to earn your vote.
Paid for by the campaign to elect Jill Broxton-Teston for Santa Rosa County School Board.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for WNBA star Caitlin Clark, who we've already been watching due to her strange focus on playing basketball instead of speaking out on issues we, the people of the Holy Acronym String, care about. We recently canceled her Indiana Fever teammate Sophie Cunningham due to her hateful comments that women's sports is not a place for a biological man. As a result of Cunningham's verbal violence, there have sadly been demonstrators celebrating Cunningham, which prompted Seattle Storm co-owner Celeste Keaton to call some of those supporters bleeping insane outside a game against the Fever. Sadly, the WNBA then suspended Keaton for 5 games. As a follow-up, during a press conference this week, a reporter asked Caitlin Clark how she and her teammates have been navigating this topic in the locker room.
I think for us, like, you know, it's not really a discussion we really have in our locker room. I think it's for leagues and the governing bodies to work with their athletes to find solutions, but our focus is on basketball, and that's what we talk about and how we can get wins, and obviously we didn't do that tonight, so need to find an area to improve in that way.
Oh, dear Otherin, this is really, really bad. Now, I know at first glance it might seem like she didn't say anything problematic at all, but that is the problem. It was precisely her choice to not answer the question and not take a stand that is so outrageous. Silence is worse than heresy. Yes, it was bad when the Duchess of finger-pointing herself, Sophie Cunningham, took the wrong side on trans rights, but at least in doing so, she validated the importance of the subject. By saying nothing, Caitlin was either declaring that the topic isn't important enough to talk about, or that athletes should focus on playing sports and not comment on polarizing no-win social matters, or both. And when the reporter generously offered Clark a chance to atone for her sin of omission, she dismissed him even more rudely.
Do you have any, you know, reaction to the...
I just answered for you.
I just answered for you? She's going even harder in the wrong direction, basically saying my non-answer is my answer. She's almost scolding him by implying that people hired to play a sport should just do that task without making it political or using their platform to bend the arc of the no-dunks universe toward justice. Cunningham is wrong, but at least she's playing our game of treating trans rights as a subject all athletes should comment on. Clark isn't even dignifying this with a response, a dismissal far worse than any mere disagreement. She's essentially saying, just let me shut up and dribble, which is exactly the problem. As a straight white female basketball star, we expect her to admit her privilege, apologize for her whiteness, admit that she's straight and that that's a result of heteronormative oppression, and use her fame to advance our racial, sexual, and gender causes, making her at least an ally of the rainbow, if not a rainbow person herself. As you all know, Flatick's third doctrine of identity politics teaches us that we are all obligated to take a stance on everything we believe in at all possible times, for it is our issues that make us who we are. And who are we if we don't let politics saturate everything we do? So for committing a true spiritual felony, premeditated, first degree, keeping your opinions to yourself, with contempt for the court of progressive opinion, Caitlin Clark, we cast thee out. May the flames of our fury spark in you a burning fever of repentance. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, retired Air Force Major General Dr. Mark Brown, president and CEO of Alabama's Tuskegee University. Now, you know that normally we would almost never consider canceling a black president of an HBCU, but when you hear what Brown has done for you lately, I think you'll agree this was necessary. In a note to students this week, he announced a new policy for campus attire. He told the young adults that they're now prohibited from wearing revealing clothes in class. Also banned are bedroom shoes, bonnets, do-rags, hats, headscarves, caps, hoods, bandanas, or any other head coverings, and sunglasses. They can't wear short shorts, swimsuit bottoms, bodysuits, sleeveless undershirts, and even t-shirts worn as dresses are banned. And baggy or loose-fitting pants must be worn with a belt that fits around the waist. I'll pause while you consider how serious this is. This black retired general has just banned virtually every element of black youth clothing from being worn at a black university. A member of the Proud Boys could hardly have done a more thorough job of writing this dress code. But why is this so important? Because he's basically telling these young black students they must dress more white if they're going to succeed in the white business world. And he thinks this is a good thing. Look, just because Asians and Middle Easterners have long practiced cultural assimilation as a method of succeeding in the U.S., that doesn't mean African Americans should do so. In fact, if any racial group is justified in resisting the oppression of white supremacy culture, it's the students at an HBCU. Remember, it's very important to our whole project of permanent racial division that we continue to keep black Americans and white Americans divided. We need non-unity in order to keep preaching the importance of unity. We need separation in order to keep preaching the rightness of coming together. If black students fit in, get ahead, and prosper, how will we continue to keep them deprived and enslaved to the Democrat Party like we've done for 50 years? And this black general has just announced to the world that American black culture has a professionalism problem that isn't the fault of whitey, but is the fault of his own people? How dare he? How can these students go into white professional spaces, reject dominant cultural norms, demand accommodation, and perpetuate racial resentment for refusing to fit in if they simply agree to fit in? It's outrageous, and Brown must go. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, a resounding serving of one-hand clapping and this week's brushed tin singing bowl of justice go to the wokeism champions in the People's Republic of California for their work to remedy the structural injustice and white supremacy culture that has until now kept methamphetamines users from enjoying the free government-provided meth pipe. Yes, for decades, recreational drug users, some of our favorite voters, have been marginalized from polite society and forced to skulk around alleys, back rooms, and the poorly lit corners of public parks whenever they wanted to get high. And if being pushed to the margins of so-called polite society, which is just one of the many dog whistle racist code words, wasn't enough, they also had to pay their own money, not only for their drugs, but for their drug paraphernalia. As you know, a good meth pipe, for example, can set someone back as much as $8 or $9. And don't get me started on the outrageous cost of syringes. Well, in Los Angeles, all that's being solved with this year's opening of the Skid Row Care Campus, a location where drug users can come out of the shadows and into the bleak fluorescent warehouse lights of a government-funded syringe and meth pipe dispensary and safely inhale, ingest, or shoot up their drug of choice. Actively supporting the Democratic Socialist dream, Skid Row has funded the tune of $26 million last year in state, local, and federal dollars. Not only can meth users save on the cost of a pipe, but they can enjoy other services including doggy daycare, clothing optional yoga, and valet parking for your stolen shopping cart. We just love the idea that instead of trying to get people off drugs, California is fully embracing the drug-enhanced alternative lifestyle, man. And we have even more praise for Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass, who explained, "It's the duty of every Angeleno to help these poor meth addicts be freed from any natural consequences of their drug habit."
How many people who are unhoused that you meet have no teeth at all? They don't have teeth. Why? Because meth rots your teeth. You can't succeed without teeth. So there needs to be comprehensive health care provided to people.
This might be one of the most just, inclusive, fair, smart, forward-thinking initiatives I've ever heard of. Instead of blaming meth heads for their terrible teeth, Mayor Bass has correctly recognized that drug use is just another way of life, as valid as any other, and that nobody should have to suffer the inability to hold down a job just because they have meth fangs. And instead of spouting some nonsense about getting people off drugs so they can become more employable, this font of wisdom realized that we just need to fix their teeth and find them 9-to-5s that pay enough to afford the basic necessities, food, clothing, shelter, and soot-stained glass tubes. So well done, California and Los Angeles. You really are showing all of America the path to a brighter future. Gently rub that justice mallet around the rim of your singing bowl and feel the feng shui wash gently over you like the soothing waves of a drug-induced coma. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
827 on News Radio 92.3. PJ has traffic for us.
Thanks, Andrew. There is a vehicle crash with injuries, I-10 eastbound right around Kingsfield Road. Use caution. Also have a vehicle crash and roadblock, Johnson Avenue at Lawton Street in Pensacola. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. The felony case has been dismissed against a former Olympian accused of vandalizing the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. A D.C. judge officially dismissed charges against Olympic canoeist David Hearn after U.S. Attorney General Jeanine Pirro called for that case to be dropped. Researchers have, for the first time now, used artificial intelligence to create a functioning synthetic virus. The Stanford-led team is hoping that the technology will lead to medical benefits like using AI-created viruses to kill E. coli and fight drug-resistant bacteria. And the U.S. Senate apparently hoping to get a few things done before they leave Washington today for a 5-week recess. Majority Leader John Thune says they're hoping to pass a stopgap funding bill and a bill imposing sanctions on Russia.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 829 News Radio 92.3. You might have seen the news that President Trump issued two executive orders yesterday, both targeting birthright citizenship. And you might say, well, gosh, he got told no by the Supreme Court and he doesn't take no for an answer. So he's doing like Biden did and trying to find a workaround. I read it a little differently. And you know me, I'm not at all reluctant to criticize the president. I actually think he is trying to find the ways where there might be some wiggle room within the law to affect birth citizenship, particularly with regards to birth tourism, which is not a very high number of people every year, by the way. It's a very small number. It's in the tens of thousands, which it's not nothing, okay, but compared to like 3 million people born a year, it's not even a drop in the bucket. But he's basically, I think, also working within the boundaries of what Brett Kavanaugh wrote in his Supreme Court opinion on that, where he concurred, but he said it wasn't a violation of the 14th Amendment, what Trump wanted to do. Instead, it was a statutory issue, and Congress needed to change the law. And he's not going to Congress to change the law, but he is saying that, for example, if somebody is an alien enemy of the U.S., even though they're not a member of a foreign military, if they're pro-terrorist, that would exclude them. If their parents are a foreign government employee, as opposed to just being ambassadors, if they tried to purchase tourism here in order to have a child, that would undermine it. Or if they're in the territorial waters in the U.S. or territories. So I think he's trying to find a little bit of wiggle room within what the Supreme Court ruled. I don't think he's trying to do exactly what the Supreme Court told him he couldn't do.
News. I'm Therese Crowley. President Trump says he's getting personally involved in Iran talks to reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
I think we're doing very well. I just, you know, I'm involved in the negotiation. I think we're doing fine. It could be soon.
But the Senate confirmation of Todd Blanch for Attorney General is out of his hands, as a second swing Republican, Lisa Murkowski, says she's a no. Joining Maine's Susan Collins, Senator Mitch McConnell is out on medical, and one more no tanks the nomination. The president signed an executive order to end birth tourism. Policy advisor Stephen Miller tells Fox it's visa fraud.
No one in the world is any more allowed to obtain a visa for this fraudulent purpose.
And the July jobs report, 23,000 jobs lost, unemployment rate of 4.1%. Markets like it, betting the Fed will not raise interest rates. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 79 degrees with mostly cloudy skies at the moment. We'll get a full check on our forecast in just a couple of minutes. Escambia County Commissioners voted to move forward on the long-awaited OLF 8 development, sending proposed land use changes to the state for review yesterday. The vote comes after the developers' team removed data center language from their design plans following months of public pushback.
Outlying fields was never meant. It was never designed or meant to pick a winner among these three groups. It was designed to find a version of this project where all three groups get more than they would have gotten from any single stakeholder plan. We believe this current future land use amendment is the first step to achieving just that.
And the vote sends future land use changes to Tallahassee for review, with the item expected to return to commissioners for a final decision in the coming months. Also yesterday, Escambia County Commissioners honoring two employees. Sheila Knight, a custodial worker who served the county for more than 33 years, was recognized for her retirement, with commissioners and coworkers praising her dedication and positive impact on everybody she worked with over the decades. Commissioner Lumen May offered personal remarks, crediting Knight's advice and support as part of his inspiration to run for office. Separately, commissioners also recognized Robert Carlin, the county's information security officer, as the employee of the month. Carlin, who joined the county in 2021, has been credited with modernizing Escambia County's cybersecurity program. Part of Benny Russell Park and Pace is closed as of Monday as crews replace playground equipment there. The project is expected to wrap up by mid-November. The splash pad and a nearby playground will stay open throughout the construction process, although parking near the work zone could see some intermittent closures as well. Crews will also be removing the park's commemorative tile wall due to years of weathering and damage. The county has created a digital archive so residents can view and download images of those tiles before they are taken down. Congressman Jimmy Patronis wants to build a new National Veterans Cemetery on about 200 acres at Eglin Air Force Base. Patronis says there's about 100,000 veterans in Northwest Florida, and right now the closest options for veterans in that area are either Pensacola or Tallahassee. A steering committee will choose an exact site, and work could begin as soon as September. A Milton man is facing charges after allegedly exposing himself on a public nature trail in Niceville. Police say security footage captured 46-year-old Bradley Patrick removing his clothing at Turkey Creek during normal operating hours back in July. He was arrested yesterday in Santa Rosa County on an active warrant. He's being held pending extradition to Okaloosa County. And it is 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Traffic is brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox knocks them out. I-10 and 110 are both flowing smooth right now. If you're on US 98 east and westbound through Navarre, that's looking good as well. Gulf Beach Highway, not showing any delays. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be seeing a beautiful summertime day today with a 20% chance of rain. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 89. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 78. For Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a 20% chance of rain, high near 90 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 79. Heading into Sunday, a 30% chance of some pop-up showers and thunderstorms. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high near 89 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, it's 79 degrees. We've got cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. And your money now this hour. Markets are mixed at the opening bell. The Dow is down about 43 and a quarter points at 53,841.85. S&P 500 is up 27 points at 77,36.56. NASDAQ up just over 1% this morning, 26,614.197. 10-year bond rate is down at 4.627%. Gold prices up 110.20 at 44,09.80. Silver up 278 at 64.39. And Bitcoin this morning is up $851 at 65,228.28. Looking at those oil prices, always the big question lately. West Texas Intermediate is down about a quarter percent, 77.09 a barrel. Brent crude is down about a half percent right now at 82.03. per barrel. Looking at those gas prices here, the national average from AAA is down today, $4.04 a gallon for regular. Local prices, we are seeing average prices throughout Escambia County at about $3.66. Average prices in Santa Rosa at $3.74. Okaloosa at $3.72. The Government Accountability Office says Elon Musk's Doge overstated some of its claimed cost savings from cuts. Doge, or the Department of Government Efficiency, claimed $110 billion saved with its cuts to federal contracts, grant programs, and leases. Overall, Doge reported a total of $215 billion in cuts. A new report from the GAO says there were issues with transparency that made the reported savings unreliable. For instance, millions of dollars in reported savings from cuts to leases included leases that were already in the process of termination before Doge was formed. Now, job creation stalled last month. The government's monthly employment report shows no new non-farm payroll jobs added in July. In fact, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says 23,000 jobs were unexpectedly shed. Most analysts had been expecting to see as many as 83,000 new jobs created. TikTok is closing its Nashville office and laying off the entire local staff. The Tennessean reports that the closure comes a little more than 2 years after the company opened its Music Row location. TikTok had signed a lease for 144,000 square feet of office space in April of 2024. The company spokesperson says the closure will streamline operations and align teams for long-term growth. It's 8:38, our next news at 9, and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Ever notice how the best advice usually comes from someone who actually does this stuff for a living? That's the idea behind Pet Talk, also known as the Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9.
Good morning, this is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg.
Meg sits down with local business owners and professionals to talk real solutions, real experience, and real life questions. Pet Talk with Meg, weekdays 9 to 11 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, informative, local, dependable.
Everybody jump!
I said a hip hop, the hip, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance to talk in studio with a couple of friends about things that have been going on this week. And I will let you know, we got three FA-18 Hornets just took off from Pensacola International Airport, headed north. So if you hear a loud noise, you're wondering what it was. It's just a couple normal gray skins. You know, that's all it is. Just doing their thing. No big deal. All right.
To Pensacola.
What's that?
Welcome to Pensacola.
Yeah, I mean,
don't get mad. Put
days.
It on Facebook.
Right. Too loud. Dang it.
Too loud, too low. Shish it.
Oh, no, not too low.
Shish in the it. Studio, you're hearing the voices without the names yet. We got Craig Heinzman. He's a community outreach pastor of Marcus Point Baptist Church. Craig, welcome back, sir. Good to have
Hola,
you.
Hola, senor.
And also, what did you do?
Hola, senor.
Okay, fair enough. And then Charles Thornton, who is a longtime friend, has been on the show many, many times. And current or former vice chair?
I'm the current
vice chair of the Escambia
Party. Along with a couple
party.
Other things, but a current one.
And a bunch of secret projects. And does some online podcasting, does real good stuff. Where yeah. He interviews a lot of people, so it's fantastic. Yeah. Let's start with...
Secret podcast.
It's a secret podcast. Oh, dang it, I spilled the beans. Hola, senor. Okay, so... are you threatening me? Let's talk about... I'm going to be on vacation next week. Got a lot of people filling in for me. They're going to be doing a really good job. It should be fantastic. Including first-timer Colton Wright is going to be on Wednesday.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah, okay. So it ought to be interesting to hear a commissioner interview Mayor D.C. Reeves.
Okay.
Oh, all
so
right.
That should be fascinating. Okay. Walker Wilson, Todd Thompson, Jonathan Owens, Josh Newby are going to co-do a thing on Friday, and then Jennifer Harrison on Monday, so it'll be great. But when I get back, it'll be Monday back and then Tuesday primary. So if I want to talk about anything on the primary, I probably got to do it today. So here's my question. The elected versus appointed superintendent issue and the moral question of whether the three members of the school board did us dirty by forcing this onto the primary election. Craig, you have a thought?
I definitely have a thought since I spoke out against the appointed back in.
You're an elected?
I'm an elected guy.
All right.
I think we do best when we have a say. I understand the mindset when we originally stepped into this was like, oh, we can shop around, we can get the best candidates, but... I think Pensacola and our community is unique in how we culturally and how we do things. And I think we found that out
with Tim Smith.
I as a person, I love Tim Smith. He was a good guy.
Right. Agreed.
Managing the school system, his ideas and his philosophies, it just did not float here. It made a lot of problems. The moment we switched, we found a lot of.
Well, Keith freedoms. Leonard's appointed, and he's doing well.
He's appointed
well enough.
He's appointed, yes, but he's a local guy,
right? You could have elected him too. I mean,
we could
way.
Have elected him, yes, but
so I'm curious. I'm curious about something, Charles. I'll get to you in just a second, but I'm curious. I want a question from you. So, is it your view? And I'm asking this because I don't have a strong view on this personally. I really don't. This is one of those issues that I don't particularly care about the outcome of the vote. I do think it was absolutely wicked and devious and dirty for them to push it on the primary, where only a small portion of people are actually going to wind up voting for it. I think that was totally wrong. That's Paul Fetsko, Kevin Adams, and Tom Harrell doing that. So, okay. But the question is it your view that every time there is an elected board, there ought to also be an elected executive? So, do you want an elected county administrator? Do you think if there's a city council, there ought to be an elected mayor or city administrator? You know, like, is it your view across the board? On ECUA, we elect the board members and then they hire an executive director. Should we vote for the executive director? Because it seems like you got to kind of pick either all the time have both or all the time have an appointed. And like even to the president, right? So
I'm sure, I would say no, not in all scenarios. And here's the reason why. I think the education system has tremendous. There's a big difference between ECUA and Education Department.
Okay,
and how those are handled here. I can't speak to how this got on the ballot right now. That's actually completely. I have no idea how it happened.
I just think everybody should be able to vote, and they can. They can, but they're not gonna.
When this issue was back when Tim Smith was in, was actually as the superintendent, the appointed superintendent. I did speak up at a board meeting about the idea of going back to an elected.
Oh, so you're the one to blame.
Partially, I guess. I have no idea.
All right, Charles, what do you think? Let's start with the base. Well, let's start with the question of the primary or the general. Again, I mean, I really hate that they push this. Three board members push this on the primary for political reasons, in my opinion.
Well, I've heard, I'm kind of stuck in the middle, but the school of thought out there is that the quality of the candidate that you can buy or you can spend money with to get better candidates if the board appoint them, then they can go out and do a search, but we have not gotten to that bridge yet. But at the same time, you can do the same thing as the individual is elected. You can actually vet them coming through the process. Mm-hmm. The only thing about that, you would have to live somewhere in the county, I believe.
Right.
Either you could run, and if you're elected, you could maybe, I don't know, this is more of a supervisor election thing. I kind of tend to think that I like to see him running, but I'm stuck. I'm stuck because I think in order to get the type of candidate, if we had a good vetting system, and if we were in a position to spend the type of money that's needed to lead such an organization as this, you probably need a person that nothing against Coach Leonard, he's a good friend of mine. I like him. I love him. And he could run and he could win. But I just think that you almost need a person of a university executive caliber mm-hmm. to run a system such as ours. We have one of the largest systems.
By Florida standards, middle of the pack, I guess. But right, by national standards, I mean, it's common for school districts to have five schools in them. I mean, that's normal in this. Right. Florida is weird.
We do schools, how we do districts.
And sure. I think they turned down Keith's offer for a raise. So we're not willing to put the money
to reward the
school. Let's not talk about the school is a whole other thing.
Yeah, hold on for just a second. We'll come back to this because I think it's important. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Thanks, Andrew. No accidents or delays to report. If you see anything, 437-1620. I'm PJ through traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. So I'll just put my cards on the table. I tend to think that the executive function is often so different from the political function that I generally like appointed almost across the board. Like, you know, the original president, we didn't vote for president in the beginning. You know, the Electoral College, the idea was that the House and the Senate was appointed by the governor, you know, so the Senate wasn't something. You voted on the House of Representatives.
Right.
And then what they did is they picked the people that they thought would, you know, and of course that changed pretty quickly to becoming much more of a popular election for all that. But that, like, the original idea of the founders was these people we elect, and then they have the expertise amongst themselves to hire, or, you know, to find the best executive and that kind of thing. And I sympathize with that because, like you said, EC Way, you want a technical expert. You don't need a politician. Schools, do you need a politician or do you need a technical expert on education? And we've gotten accustomed to a superintendent who's political, who talks to us and all that. But is that really what you need in that role?
I understand the thinking on both sides. I really do. I think we did not do the best job once we had the opportunity to go appointed for our community.
Which doesn't prove the question.
It does not. You're right.
But I will say
that I like the accountability. I feel that is there. We all know the old saying, as we've seen it now,
yeah,
you know, can you count to three? Right. That's about as much accountability as anything has.
Right.
In an elected, there's a lot more accountability, I feel, to
directly
the
to you as a voter.
Yeah, that's personally how I feel.
And compounding that problem is the single voting member district. Because if you live in, like I live in District 3, you know, on the county commission, I have no say. Because my guy's vote doesn't matter. Lumen, I don't, he's a Democrat. Right. He doesn't, right. I mean, he's not the guy I would pick to be my, right? But I live in a Democrat district. So the guy that represents me has no power on the commission. Not really, you know. I mean, nowadays, he had before. And so the same problem with the school board is if you're in the wrong district, maybe you're three, you're outvoted or whatever. And that's, the value of having an elected countywide is at least you have a say in that. Like John Peacock says, at least you would have a say in a county administrator who's elected by everybody.
I just want to say that it's ironic that you would say you live in District 3, which I, you know, which I'm very familiar with and grew up in. And I like Lumen. He's a good guy as well. Friend of mine.
Love
Lumen.
Friend. But, Lumen. Friend.
Yeah, FY. But some of his politics I don't really agree with either.
Right.
So if I had a choice, maybe somebody else. But back to the school situation. I just think that we're going to have to really – the skill set needed is not necessarily that of running a classroom, of running a middle school, this, or being the senior, over the seniors, or this, or that. We need administrative type skills to put in that position. And I think until we, if it's appointed, until we cast a wide net, nothing against Keith, I like Keith, wide net, and willing to spend the type of money that an organization like that can afford to spend, we're going to continue to complain. Because no matter, just because somebody is a good politician,
right,
doesn't mean
well, I can see that.
They're going to be a
I
good
can see that,
administrator.
But I will say,
the skill of campaigning and the skill of leading are not the same thing.
Within the teachers, you saw a large amount of teachers get upset and have problems under Smith and under the leadership there and start to leave. And we saw that ship kind of correct under Keith. Now, that might be because he understands the culture of the environment here in Pensacola area. It might just be because he understands the teaching, what it means to be a teacher, to be in classroom. I think sometimes you can get somebody that's so cerebral, so policy or procedural driven that they don't understand the practicalities of being in. And we go back, we talked about it earlier today. We talked about the democratic socialist stuff.
Sure.
You know, it's like
off the air. We're talking about this.
Off the air. Yeah. And it's just like, you can understand their thinking to some degree.
These are not dumb people, but they are advocating foolish things.
Correct. And it's because you're like, how in the world do you think that's going to work? In practicality,
it has
terms,
failed in the past, right?
And that's why I think sometimes some of these guys that come in that might have all these great ideas and plans, and they try to implement them in a practical term in a classroom, then it just completely fails because they've never been in a classroom.
You know, the I haven't said this on the air, but I'm kind of, this is about where I'm at. I'm so frustrated with the school board right now, and it's not actually all five members; it's really just these three. I'm so frustrated with the school board that I'm almost willing to vote for an elected just so I can have some of that power back. And I really don't care about the issue. Historically, I've said I do not care about the issue. Like, this business of the school funding, it drives me up the wall because they're continually complaining that they've lost students, right? Customers are fleeing.
Right.
And you should never be, you know, if the customers flee your business only because they can, and they couldn't before and now they can, that should tell you something. Fix the business, right? But then to have the audacity to whine about losing the state per student funding, going to follow their vouchers, still homeschoolers, you know, whatever, totally separate, but they keep all the property tax. And the property tax goes up, and they raised the millage last year. And I'm thinking, okay, so at a certain point, like if you lost half of your students, are you going to cut the property taxes in half? Because, you know, and to his credit, Kevin Adams asked the question a little bit, and that's the fair question. You guys keep complaining about losing the money, but actually your per student available funds increases every time you lose a student because you still get 100% of the property taxes.
Can I come in on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was on the half cents sales tax committee for 9 years. I came off of it a couple of years ago. I just got my plate got too full. But one of the things is the last time around we put it on the ballot so we can continue to get the half cent sale tax. We done it early. It was probably due later on, maybe this time or next time. But the thing about it is we're constantly getting the funds in, but it was we're steady closing schools and renovating, doing this and doing that.
Yeah.
So so at some point in time, this is nothing against the board or the administrator. There need to be an accountant. If we're going to continue to get that sale tax, now, mind you, before we didn't have to share that, but now you got it. They call it a Stanley County Public School, so you have to share that half of sale tax has to be shared with other entities.
I think you have to look at everything. Anytime you have this kind of money coming in, you have to look at – there's got to be fair accounting, and you got to see where it's going and how it's being spent in every term possible. That's not saying anything shady is happening, but what I am saying is when you have – we as the taxpayers should be demanding that level of accountability for the money that was coming in. I do think there's a problem with parents that put their kids in – they basically say, hey, I'm going to homeschool my kid. Because I know how my daughter was a kindergarten teacher. We saw this happen in her class, this past year.
They'd say homeschool and then change their mind?
They have to – I think it's – certain date, and then they, mm-hmm. they keep the money.
Yeah.
So they kept the money that the state gave them. Then they put their kid in the school, and then so they and basically
absolutely.
And
that
there's no way to get
too.
The money back.
Yeah.
And there's this weird system that's just not great. It's tough. I applaud every teacher that's out there.
That's the thing is the teachers in every environment are working their tails off.
They are.
And
they really are.
They do. They go way above whether they're private school teachers, public school teachers, homeschooled. You know, they all tie. And so I want a system in which they can earn the living they need to get.
Yep.
But I want them to be producing the product that people want. And the clear lesson of the vouchers is that a lot of parents do not believe the public school is providing the product they want. And also many do because they still stay.
Right.
We can take a real quick break. PJ has traffic on the fives.
I-10 and 110 are both flowing smooth right now. Not showing any slowdowns on Pine Forest or in Carr City. I'm PJ with your traffic on the Fox.
Thanks so much, PJ. Charles, you look like you wanted to jump in there, so I don't want to cut up your thought.
I want to get back to this elected and appointed thing. One of the things you say, if that person is elected, he's accountable to the people, the citizen. But if they're appointed, now once they are elected, they get in office, they got a pretty good run for 4 years, no matter what they do.
Right.
They can sleep at the wheel. And they'll be there until
the governor is our recourse. There's no recall. Move. That's right.
But
right.
If a person is appointed, if you got the right board and if you got the right person, then I think there's more accountability built into the appointed process
because they can be removed anytime.
You got to make sure that you get to the next election and get the right board in, because that's the key. Then is you have to have the right board to get the right result.
That's true.
Instead of electing one person, you got to elect five people.
Here's the thing. We're not going to bring in no socialists in Escambia County. I grew up in Escambia County.
I would love to believe that you're right. There's a whole election cycle coming, and they're trying really hard.
You didn't think it was possible in some other places, and here it is.
Not here. Not in Escambia County. But
on getting a candidate in office in Escambia County who is a publicly acknowledged socialist – seems unlikely, but who's winning the public opinion, PR, and persuading counties and councils to do things? It's the socialists.
Yeah,
they're winning on the data center nonsense. Yep. They're winning on the flock cameras, at least in terms of public perception.
Yep.
They're pushing all kinds of – they want on, you know –
here in Escambia County.
They are organized. They are active. They're passionate. They're having an effect.
Wild.
I think you have to acknowledge that they're – and. You know, I like to watch things and say, well, those people can't possibly get done what they want to get do. And then the pitchfork posse in Milton sweeps the entire city council out.
Yep.
The people I look at and think, are you kidding? And then
and they might
are.
Not put a label on them.
Right. And that's not socialist. That's a different thing. But that's the point is, I don't say never, because it's how many people vote, how many people are informed, how many people are listening, and reading and doing their due diligence. And
please don't let TikTok drive your political view.
And they are emboldened based on what they've seen elsewhere, for sure.
I'm going to have to say you guys making an excellent point. Yeah. But back to my
be scared hopefully. And vote is what I'm saying. Be scared and vote,
be scared,
man.
Be informed and vote.
Golly.
Be scared, be informed and vote.
Okay, never.
It
say.
Can happen here. Oh
never
my God,
never.
It sure enough can.
Yes, it can.
Be vigilant. Get out and vote. And from my perspective, the only thing I'm going to say is vote for the most conservative candidate. Vote for the person you
if
know.
If you can figure out who
because
it is.
Because that was a little thing because of who I am, because I'm a conservative. I say vote for that and just keep an eye on everybody. I'm apolitical when it comes to this show. But I just can't see it because we're going to have to – what we're going to have to do is when we have a process of bringing the people in. We have no control over the voters.
You're right.
But on boards, we do.
Well, let me give you a possibly terrible analogy, but I think you'll get where I'm coming from. You know, in 2016, there were a lot of people that were absolutely sure that Trump could not get elected.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Whether you like it or not, there were a lot of people who on Tuesday night were like, what just happened? Because anything can happen in an election. Right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you.
Thank you, public school teachers. We love you.
Stream us at NewsRadio923.com.